Martin Buber tells a story about Rabbi Mendel, who once boasted to his teacher, Rabbi Elimelech, that in the evenings he saw the angel who rolls away the light before the darkness, and in the morning, the angel who rolls the darkness before the light. Yes, Rabbi Elimelech said, in my youth I saw that too. Later on, you don't see those things anymore. This past week, I spent some time thinking about the story we just heard from the Transfiguration. And I looked at paintings of the Transfiguration. It's a very popular subject for artists. And on the internet, there are a lot of reproductions of paintings that date as far back as the early centuries after Christendom, the Middle Ages, and down even to our own time. There are paintings from the Far East and paintings from Africa, from Byzantium to Russia to Italy and Egypt. Typically, the paintings portray the Transfiguration pretty much as the gospel we just heard tells it. Jesus is shown standing atop Mount Tabor, enveloped by great light. On one side of him is Moses, on the other side is Elijah. And below him, generally lying on the ground, cowering in fear, are the disciples, Peter, James, and John. That's the usual configuration, whether you're looking at Orthodox icons from Russia or 20th century paintings from Africa. At least that's what I thought, until I happened across a painting by the Italian Renaissance painter Fra Angelico. The description that I read for this painting before I even looked at it was the following. Jesus standing powerful on the rock, three disciples greatly astonished below, and at the side, four saints little more than sketched. The description immediately intrigued me because it made no mention of Moses or Elijah. And what I found in the painting, of course, I have reproduced for you in the bulletin this morning. Take a look briefly at it. There are the three disciples, Peter, James, and John, cowering in fear at the bottom of the painting. They're rising powerfully from the rock and surrounded by an almond-shaped mandorla of light is the figure of Jesus, his arms outstretched, in a gesture of embrace that also oddly is reminiscent of what he will assume in a position as he hangs from the cross. At either side of Jesus, there are two images. One fully realized, an image of a saint, possibly Francis on the right, and either Mary or Saint Clare on the left. And then the other, the partial image, of the heads of two male saints, or holy men. It's my sense that the description found in this painting, that is, four saints little more than sketched, is not the best way to describe those images. Instead, it would better read, at the sides are Moses and Elijah, and Moses and Elijah little more than sketched, and two other saints. But still, this painting from Fra Angelico, unlike other paintings of the Transfiguration, I think makes an interesting point, one that's significant. By only partially sketching the image of Moses and Elijah, I believe the artist is suggesting that this vision of Transfiguration, falls into the category of seeing in the way that Rabbi Elimelech described for Rabbi Mendel. In my youth, I saw that too. Later on, you don't see those things anymore. The Native American elder, once told the Blackfoot Indian scholar Jamaki Hightower the following. He said, "You must learn to look at the world twice. First, you must bring your eyes together in front of you so that you can see each droplet of rain on the grass, so that you can see the smoke rising from an anthill in the sunshine, so that you can see and let nothing escape your notice. Then you must look again with your eyes at the very edge of what's visible. Now you must see dimly. If you wish to see things that are dim, visions, mists, cloud people, animals which hurry past you in the dark, you must learn to look at the world twice if you wish to see all there is to see. You must look at the world twice if you wish to see all that there is to see. I wonder, if we were present on Mount Tabor with Jesus, would we, like Peter and James and John, have seen Jesus transfigured and talking with Moses and Elijah? Or would this event have been another one of those things that the 4th century philosopher Sallust referred to as things that never were, yet always are? Would Moses and Elijah have seemed flesh and blood to us? Would they have been lightly sketched like phantoms, if they were visible at all? Maybe what we have seen isn't really all that important about the Transfiguration. Maybe the Transfiguration tells us something about how we can see and too often don't see. Like that Native American elder, Annie Dillard, a favorite writer of mine, says that there are two ways of seeing. One way is analytical. When I see this way, she writes, I analyze, I pry, I hurl over logs, I roll away stones, I study the riverbank a square foot at a time, probing and tilting my head. But there is another kind of seeing that involves a letting go. When I see this way, I sway, transfixed, empty. When I see this way, I see truly. I think that the Transfiguration is not so much about a thing that happened atop Mount Tabor 2,000 years ago. I think that the Transfiguration is about what's happening around us all the time. Earth is crammed with heaven, Elizabeth Barrett Browning reminded us. And every common bush aflame with God. Unfortunately, that's not the way most of us, including myself, notice what is going on around us. A transfigured world in which we live and move and have our being. We sleepwalk through our days, barely looking beyond the person who stands in front of us in line. We slumber away our nights in front of television sets when the grandest light show of all is going on in our backyards and sky. We make our way to church and fail to see the hidden form of God that sits next to us, either in the pew or on the bus or standing in the drugstore with us. Transfiguration, I think, is going on all around us, every moment, all the time, if only, as Annie Dillard reminds us, we would let go, if we would just open our hearts, not our eyes, our hearts, and see it. Dillard also wrote a book called Pilgrim at Tinker Creek, which tells a story about people who have been blinded since birth, and how they suddenly regained their sight. This happened when doctors first developed the art of performing cataract surgery. And hundreds of people around the world at that time who had never seen were suddenly given the gift of sight. For many, this was strange, even a difficult experience, adjusting to a world of spatial relationships and colors they had never seen before. Some were so frightened by it that they actually cursed the doctors and asked to have their sight removed. One of those, a 22-year-old girl, was dazzled by the world's brightness and kept her eyes shut for 2 weeks afterwards because of its impact. At the end of that time, she opened her eyes again, and though she didn't recognize any objects, she was now more directed to see the images and the colors and the outlines in front of her. And then her expression of gratification and astonishment overwhelmed her, and she repeatedly said, "Oh my God, how beautiful. Oh my God, how beautiful." Sisters and brothers, we are being invited into a world of seeing. And that's the world we're inviting Elodie and Grace to join us in. A world of seeing. Open your eyes to the world around you. See the world with that second sight. Gather a new vision of the way God has gifted us to see the beautiful that is all but unbearable before us. Don't miss the plain, ordinary, and transfigurating moments of life. They're happening right here. They're happening right now. They're happening every day of your life, just as they happen right here, right now, everywhere. Transfiguration is all around us, dancing like fireflies at the edges of our vision. Go and watch it. Go watch it now. Amen.